The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mary Grace Payton for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Religion in the News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the Religion News Service. Our first article was published on May 6 and written by Aleha Hertzler McCain and entitled Silicon Valley Bishop, Two Catholic AI Experts Weigh In on AI Evangelization. It took a little more than a day for Father Justin, an artificial intelligence avatar posing as a priest, to be defrocked. After Catholic Answers, a site devoted to evangelizing for Catholicism, introduced the character to answer questions about the faith, Catholics on social media call the character a scandalizing mockery of the sacred priesthood that offered only a substitute for real interaction. On April 24, Catholic Answers apologized for the experiment, and Justin was reintroduced as a lay theologian. Catholics close to the Vatican's work on artificial intelligence say that Justin captures the possible problems with AI evangelization and the reasons for caution in Pope Francis and other church officials' attempts to tackle AI, even as the technology is becoming an increasingly buzzy topic at the Vatican. The Reverend Philip Larry, a professor in the Department of Formative Education at Boston College, said that while he thinks Catholic Answers are a good group, they were a little bit too quick to enter into something which is extremely complicated, and that is interactive artificial intelligence. San Jose, California Bishop Oscar Cantu, who leads the Catholic faithful in Silicon Valley, said that AI doesn't come up much with parishioners in his diocese. Nonetheless, as a leader in the computing capital of the world, Cantu says he is engaged with AI as a global and moral issue, even if he hasn't delved into it too much. Pointing to the adage coined by Meta founder Mark Zuckerberg, "Move fast and break things," the bishop said, "With AI, we need to move more cautiously and slowly and try not to break things. The things we would be breaking are human lives and reputations." Experts agreed that Father Justin's imitation of the sacrament of confession was highly inappropriate. Cantu said, "If we have some sort of a robot in the guise of a priest, it can confuse people about the fact that the sacraments must be celebrated in person. Just because Father Justin recites the formula, that doesn't make it a sacrament," he said. The bishop cautioned that AI chat boxes should make very clear that they are AI. "It's so critical that we be as transparent as possible for the sake of the people we're trying to guide," Cantu added. Even Justin introducing himself as a lay theologian is problematic. A person who may be incredibly knowledgeable of Scripture and of church teaching, but is not a person of faith, does not do theology, because theology begins with faith, the bishop said. Noreen Hesfeld, a professor of theology and computer science at St. John's University and the College of St. Benedict, and one of the editors of a book about AI sponsored by the Vatican Dicastery for Culture and Education, said that the AI character was previously impersonating a priest, which is considered a very serious sin in Catholicism. "The leaders don't dismiss the usefulness of AI when used properly," Cantu said, "that AI can do tremendous work as a tool that can be used for good, for doing research. But," he added, "a person of faith doing technology then needs to judge the credibility of each source and the authority of each source." Larry, who has worked closely with both Vatican and AI leaders on the ethical issues surrounding AI, emphasized that Pope Francis is interested in person-centered AI, meaning that AI must be used for the good of human beings and not to the detriment of people. The best example of AI being used for evangelization, Larry said, is Magisterium AI, a chat box developed by Longbeard, a digital strategy firm founded by a former seminarian named Matthew Harvey Sanders, a friend of Larry's. The bot explains church teaching in a format like ChatGPT by drawing on official church teachings, as well as select writings such as the works of St. Augustine and St. Thomas Aquinas, linking to the documents that informed its answer. Larry distinguishes such automated research from generative AI, which learns and experiments with its newfound knowledge. When you have a generative AI, if you're not careful, it gets out of hand, he says. Accuracy issues, Herzfeld said, is one of many reasons it should not be used for evangelization. As much as you beta test one of these chatbots, you will never get rid of hallucinations, moments when the AI makes up its own answers, she said. The problem is actually built into how they work, Herzfeld continued. They work on statistics, on probabilities as to what words and phrases should follow, and they do not have internal mental models of the world. And without that, they will always get off track. Herzfeld said that an AI is only as good as the data it is trained on. On issues where the church is divided, she said, I could see bots out there giving competing answers, for example, on the desirability of the Latin Mass or the role of women in the church. Herzfeld expressed concern, too, that people who are not well-versed in technology may believe computers have a certain level of infallibility. And she worries that turning to AI bots will lead to spiritual de-skilling, convincing young people to think religion is just about answers. When I was their age, I was shy, and if I'd had a bot to answer my questions, I'd have gone to a bot instead of going to my pastor or even going to my parents to ask questions about religion, Herzfeld said, adding that forming relationships with AI instead of with other people or God could become a type of idolatry. Laurie, who has been studying AI for nearly 30 years and is in conversation with Sam Altman, the CEO of OpenAI, is optimistic that the technology will improve. He said Altman is already making progress on the hallucinations, on its challenges to users' privacy, and reducing its energy use. A recent analysis estimated that by 2027, artificial intelligence could suck up as much electricity as the population of Argentina or the Netherlands. Laurie understands that Catholic Answers Justin was designed to get people who would otherwise not be interested in the Catholic faith, but also thinks chatbots should not vie with real priests. Why don't you just go down to your parish and talk to a priest? They're not extinct, you know, he said. For evangelization, I think you need people to contact and to attract other people, said Laurie. We will never eliminate that step. Cantu believes this is the ultimate lesson to be drawn from the ill-fated Father Justin. The faith is not just about answers. It's not just about information. It's about encounter. A personal encounter with Christ, with real people, he said. Just as rank-and-file Catholics should exercise caution with AI for evangelization, Cantu suggested similar care from priests who might turn to ChatGPT for an assist when writing their homilies. While the AI suggestion can be a good starting point for priests who are pressed for time, Cantu said, the priest must make the homily his own. When anyone within the church, a person of faith, expresses the truth, to some degree they're opening a window to the mind of God, because God is truth. In the end, the bishop said, it has to be my words and my act of faith. A robot can't do that because it's not an act of faith. Now an article published on May the 8th and written by Fiona Andre entitled Harlem Church Offers Vegan Cooking Classes to Promote Healthy Lifestyle, New York. On a recent Sunday afternoon, staff members of Harlem's Ephesus Seventh-day Adventist Church traded their Saturday church clothes for aprons as they prepared to host the church's vegan cooking class. Throughout April, congregants and Harlem neighbors were invited to multiple Sunday afternoon events at the church, which, as part of the Seventh-day Adventist tradition, holds services on Saturdays. To learn to cook savory plant-based recipes, get tips on growing vegetables in urban gardens, and hear advice on how to avoid processed food. The initiative, imagined by the church's health ministry, was named Taste and See, as a nod to a verse in Psalm 34 proclaiming, "Taste and see that the Lord is good." "We're showing people that you can eat healthy and satisfy your taste buds," said Karen Phipps, director of the church's health ministry. The church created the ministry 2 years ago to promote the Seventh-day Adventist lifestyle. Since its founding in the 1860s, the Seventh-day Adventist Church has encouraged believers to give their bodies the best treatment as they are seen as the temple of the Holy Spirit. The church's dietary recommendations are inspired by the biblical book of Leviticus, which prohibits eating foods deemed unclean, including pork, rabbits, and shellfish. It also deters members from consuming alcohol and other harmful substances. Many Adventists, as many as 40%, according to some studies, have adopted a plant-based diet to comply with the church's nutritional rules. Phipps herself became a vegan 20 years ago after dealing with grave health problems. When she found out she had developed precancerous cells, she decided to pay more attention to her diet. Through the health ministry, she shares her passion for food, veganism, and health with members of her congregation. The health ministry also offers spin classes and takes the congregation on glamping weekends or glamorous camping. On its website, the church states that it believes that by fostering a healthier environment, we are not only adhering to God's plan, but also enhancing the quality of life for everyone in Harlem. Its efforts to promote a healthy lifestyle benefit the whole Harlem community, which is particularly underserved in the area of nutrition. The historically black neighborhood counts fewer supermarkets selling fresh vegetables than more affluent parts of the city, and is often referred to as a food desert. According to the New York City Health Department, the obesity rate in Central Harlem in 2015 was 28%, compared with 24% overall in New York City. For 30 years, the church has hosted a health fair where the community can receive free health screenings, consultations, and advice. "We bring a lot of healthcare professionals and natural focus professionals into the area so people can walk around, talk, and learn," said Phipps. In an effort to address the community's economic concerns, the Taste and See event also featured affordable recipes with good ingredients, ingredients that qualify for WIC dollars or stipends from the Special Supplemental Nutrition Program for Women, Infants, and Children, Phipps said. "We invite the community to participate, and we try to show economical ways of eating that you can serve your family and give them healthy food and not break the budget," said Phipps. That day, the conference room in the church's basement was turned into a makeshift kitchen for the event. Nancy Rutledge, a member of the health industry, kick-started the event by praying for healthier food habits. On the large table at the front of the room, the team prepared a one-pan Mexican quinoa, a veggie stir-fry, and Krabby Patties, inspired by SpongeBob SquarePants. As they served samples to taste, the 50 participants who came with notepads in their hands asked the cooks about the benefits of each ingredient. The staff gave tips on preparing a homemade sofrito, a Puerto Rican spice blend, to avoid buying a ready-made one, and offered alternatives to salt-filled chili powders. Each 15-minute recipe ended with a debriefing session about what participants had learned through it. The end of the event focused on a popular trend, urban gardening. For an hour, Phipps' son, Elliot, shared with the group his secrets for growing a 5-pound bag of potatoes in his New York City garden. The younger Phipps explained that, regardless of what people think, it's not difficult to grow fresh and healthy vegetables in an urban setting. Participants registered in a lottery to win a goodie bag containing an urban gardening starter pack. One of the main goals of these sessions, explained Phipps, is to raise awareness on the dangers of pesticides and other potentially harmful products, including some generally thought of as safe. She hopes the sessions could help some participants adopt a new lifestyle free of all chemicals. I look for all the chemicals in foods, and I avoid them as much as I can, she said. For May, the church's health ministry is promoting a 50 miles challenge in which congregants are encouraged to walk, run, swim, hike, bike, or kayak for 50 miles over the course of the month. Our last article was published by the Religion News Service on April 23 and written by Aleha Hertzler McCain. Why you might have heard Paul Simon's The Sound of Silence at Spanish Mass. One song has stuck with Julio Cuellar Gonzalez for practically his entire life. Among his first memories of church in the 1970s in Villa Serrano, a town in the Bolivian region of Chuquisaca, Cuellar remembers singing a specific version of Our Father. At the time, Cuellar thought it was written by a priest. He didn't imagine that the beloved Our Father's tune was actually written by Paul Simon for Simon and Garfunkel's 1960s hit, The Sound of Silence. The words were different from the typical Our Father prayer. Our Father who art in those who truly love, may the kingdom that you promised us come soon to our hearts. The love that your son left us, may that love dwell in us, began the song that Cuellar sang in Spanish. In the middle of the song, as a zampona, a traditional Andean pan flute, played the melody, parishioners said the traditional Our Father together with the words from Matthew 6. From Villa Serrano, The Sound of Silence, Our Father, followed Cuellar when he moved to Santa Cruz de la Sierra, the largest city in Bolivia. This was one of the people's favorite songs, and ours too, he said. Years later, after working as a musician on cruise ships in Mexico and then immigrating to Virginia, he found a Spanish Mass and heard it again. It connected me to my childhood, he said. Pedro Rubalcava, the director of Oregon Catholic Press Label Group, said that the Sound of Silence version of the Our Father has been widespread throughout Latin America and U.S. Latino communities for the last few decades. There are variations in the words and instrumentation in different communities. For Cuellar, even when he finally learned the tune's origin, it still felt Andean to him. It sounds to me like the melancholy, the melody, the sweetness of the music of the Andes. While there's no proof that Simon took inspiration for the Sound of Silence from the Andes, he later used an Andean tune in El Condo Pasa, a single on Simon and Garfunkel's Grammy-winning 1970 album, Bridge Over Troubled Water. When Simon recorded the vocals with permission over a recording by a French Andean band, Los Incas, believing that the melody came from a folk tune, the melody actually came from Daniel Alomia Robles' 1913 Peruvian musical theater piece called El Condo Pasa. Valdemar Hofstein, a professor of folklorist ethnology at the University of Iceland, wrote in a 2018 book, Making Intangible Heritage, El Condor Pasa, and Other Stories from UNESCO, that given Robles' travel through the Amazon and Andes to collect myths and music, part of a widespread tradition of collector-composers, it can be hard to describe the tune as either Robles' original or an arrangement. When Robles' son sued Simon because his father's compilation was registered in the U.S. copyright system, Simon settled, with the son calling it almost a friendly case. The Sound of Silence, Our Father, came back into Cuellar's life when he decided to begin recording Christian music after years of focusing on secular music. I felt like I had a debt to the Lord for the gift of the music, Cuellar explained. When he told the Episcopal Church, where he was a music minister, that he planned to make a record, people kept coming up to him after Mass asking for a recording of the Our Father. At the height of the COVID-19 pandemic, as Cuellar took walks in the woods around Virginia's Lake Braddock to connect with God and escape the fear and uncertainty, he was inspired to ask his wife to film him singing the Our Father by a stream. "We need something that will give us strength," Cuellar told her. After his friend with experience in video editing helped polish the video, he posted it to YouTube as a cover because he wasn't the author. Among many other versions of The Sound of Silence, Our Father, Cuellar's now has more than 23 million views. "I've made music my whole life," Cuellar said. "I've never reached the number of people that I've been able to reach with this marvelous work from the maestro Paul Simon. It's a miracle from God. It's a message from God, what has happened with the song," Cuellar said. But not everybody likes the version of the Our Father. Cuellar said that while the positive comments vastly outnumber the negative, he's heard people call it a diabolical song, criticizing everything from the changed words in the Our Father to the Andean instrumentation. Other people simply say that it's not appropriate for services. "I'm a child of God, and the devil doesn't arrive at my house because God is here," Cuellar said. "I'm not an expert in Christian music, but I'm an obedient person who tries to listen to the voice of God in the silence." Rubalcava said that Philadelphia Archbishop Nelson Perez has taught that Catholics should not sing the version for a few reasons. First, the words to Our Father should not be changed, especially in the liturgy. Secondly, The Sound of Silence forms part of the soundtrack for The Graduate, a 1967 movie where an extramarital affair is a major storyline. Airi E. Chavez-Barcenas, an assistant professor of music at Bowdoin College and a musicologist who studies sacred song in the Hispanic world, said that the debate around the Our Father with the melody of The Sound of Silence draws on centuries-old controversy. Setting a liturgical or devotional text to a known secular melody has been a common technique used by the Catholic Church since before the Middle Ages, Chavez-Barcenas told RNS, explaining that the technique is called contrafactum. However, Chavez-Barcenas said the technique has always been controversial, with the best-known policies against it coming during the Counter-Reformation. In Latin America, Franciscans and Jesuits always advocated for the adaptation of liturgical text in the local languages, songs, and musical styles, Chavez-Barcenas wrote. The Sound of Silence is just one instance of Latino Catholics' use of pop song melodies for devotional and liturgical music, Rubalcava said, citing an offertory song called Saber Covendris that uses Bob Dylan's Blowing in the Wind as its tune. Various liturgical adaptations of Jesus Christ Superstar melodies, and a Marian devotional song, Mi Virgen Bella, that uses the melody of Juan Gabriel's Amor Eterno. "It's illegal because you're plagiarizing, and probably without permission," said Rubalcava, saying copyright law is another issue with the Sound of Silence version of Our Father. Rubalcava said that these varied versions of popular songs are passed from one church musician to another informally, without official approval from broader church scriptures. After the Catholic Archdiocese of Chicago was found guilty in 1984 of illegally photocopying the music of a religious composer, the U.S. Catholic bishops have been very serious about respecting copyright permissions, Rubalcava said. "There's an attitude," Rubalcava said, "that exists everywhere, but particularly in Latin America, that anything for God should be free." Rubalcava said, "People don't think there's a good reason for paying for composers, artists that are trying to make a living, or trying to raise money to record some music." Rubalcava said that liturgical, musical, and theological formation is needed so that Catholics respect that the laborer gets their due. E. Michael Harrington, a professor in music copyright and intellectual property matters at Berkeley Online, said what was going on was a problem, but not a really serious one. "Technically, they're making a derivative work," Harrington explained. "If you take someone else's copyrighted material, something they've offered, and they own the copyright in, if you take that and change it, you're violating their rights." To add new words to the Sound of Silence melody, musicians need to get permission from the publisher, Harrington said. But Harrington explained, "The publisher likely will not sue because it's an organic thing that was unplanned, and people are doing it, but they're not planning it." Harrington said church leaders were taking the right steps by not endorsing the use of the melody, but he also said that they could seek a license from the publisher if they were interested in using it. Reading the comments on his video, Quaylar sees his involvement with the Our Father as serving God. "It's a song that touches the heart," he said. The comments say things like, "This song gives me peace. This song gives me hope. It gives me strength." We've run out of time for today's episode of Religion in the News. Be sure to listen next time. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Mary Grace Payton, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Religion in the News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.